Thanks for listening to this podcast of Trending with Timmeray from the Relevant Radio app. Anything you share in terms of episodes, whether it's texting it to a friend, posting on social media, helps to build up the kingdom for God, to help confront the challenging issues we face as a culture, but with joy, with hope, and with an eternal perspective where our faith collides with everyday life, bringing eternal principles to help us live our life joyfully.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmeray on Relevant Radio.
It's Marriage Hour today on Trending, and from transgenderism to same-sex marriage, there's a lot to be said with growing trends that I think are encouraging. Very encouraging. Now, if you want some free advice from a Catholic therapist with sound science, great practical tips, be sure to give me a call. I'd love to hear from you because the licensed marriage and family therapist, Doug Hinder, will be joining me a little later on. And we'll actually dive into the topic of growing your friendship with your spouse. So whether you're engaged, married, or hey, want to be one day, a great way to become a good spouse is to start thinking about and pondering marriage now, even if you're single. So be sure to listen up on that, how to grow in the friendship with your spouse, whether you are seasoned in marriage with many years behind you, you have a 7-year itch, you're in the thick of little kids and trying to find what marriage looks like, or again, you're just about to get married. It's great question time. Whatever you're navigating in your marriage, I'd love to hear from you how we can help give some guidance with our licensed marriage and family therapist today on Trending. Our toll-free line, get in line because there are a lot of questions already that have come in on social media. The toll-free line is 888-914-9149 and it's sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters Life Insurance. And by the way, just a reminder, if you ever have questions or topics you want to hear discussed on the show, let me know. I'm happy to cover them. Now, news broke over the weekend with headlines coming out claiming things that you may have heard. Mainstream media commenting on Catholic news and the Catholic world. They love to comment on things that make the Catholic Church sound as if it's not standing by what the Catholic Church has always upheld. The Washington Post and others have produced headlines saying, quote, the Vatican says transgender people can be baptized and serve as godparents. First of all, I balked at this headline just to begin with this weekend because, number one, there's no such thing as a transgender person. There are people and that's it, period. We can identify with all kinds of different things, but people are people. And of course, the Catholic Church says the floodgates are open to everyone and anyone to be baptized. This is a message of Jesus Christ. He and his apostles wined with tax collectors and sinners. Why? Because the church is a church for the sinners and the saints. And in order to become a saint, you have to be a sinner first, unless, of course, you are the Immaculate Virgin Mother Mary of God. Or God himself, such as Jesus Christ. And so I start with that context because when I saw this headline, my eyes just rolled to the back of my head because it's so silly, whether it's someone who is a politician, such as President Joe Biden, someone such as Nancy Pelosi, or an actor, you name it. The moment someone says they're Catholic and holds that on their shoulder, their sleeve, but then also says they're pro-transgender, they're pro-abortion, whatever it is, the media loves to put them as a spotlight to say, see, look, you can be Catholic, you definitely can, but you don't have to subscribe to what the church teaches. And so this headline is really another example of false advertising. And they're doing it because it confuses people. More people probably read the Washington Post, I don't know, than major Catholic news outlets. People who read the Washington Post won't necessarily read a Catholic news outlet or necessarily listen to Relevant Radio. So when you hear stories like this, let's set the record straight. The floodgates of Jesus Christ's grace is open and available to everyone and anyone. Now, a question was asked, actually three questions, by a Brazilian bishop, Negri. He posed three questions to the Vatican, the Dicastery for the Doctrine of Faith, to make some clarifications on transgender people and baptism and marriage. No, hold on. We're not going that deep into it. The three questions were this. Can a transgender person be baptized? Can a transgender person be a godfather or a godmother at baptism? And can a transgender person be a witness at a wedding? I really am already kind of balking at the way these questions were posed because we don't believe that people should be identified in such a way. Just as for example, we don't consider a person, I never call a person a gay person, a gay man, a lesbian woman, a woman who might identify in a particular way, but I don't identify them as that. They shouldn't identify themselves as that. We live in a culture where identity politics branding is the center of so much of what we do with social media today. It's almost as if all of us have to have a brand. And if you don't stick to that brand, you're in jeopardy of being canceled by your great following on social media or your friends who maybe have taken to you because you love to watch birds. And when you're no longer identifying as a bird watcher, well, you might just get canceled because they're watching you. And it's very silly the way we pose these questions. So here's the question. And with all due respect, because I think that, you know, sometimes things are lost in interpretation, and the letter response from the Vatican, from the Doctrine of Faith on these specific topics, it's not been translated into English by the Vatican yet, but various news sources have translated it. It doesn't matter if you think the church's teaching has changed. It can't. It won't. Anyone can be baptized. However, all are called to conversion and are expected to renounce sin and strive to live a life that is in accordance with the truth of Jesus Christ. That means there's a truth about the body. We can't be a soul stuck in the wrong body. We are embodied souls. We are soul and body. In fact, the Catechism of the Catholic Church is very clear that we're meant to embrace and pursue our identity as male or female according to the body that God has given us. So where is the question of baptism and being a witness to marriage if you say you identify as transgender? Well, the thing is that the church is like, sure, anyone can be baptized, anyone who can be a godparent, but they have to be living a life in line with essentially the church's teaching. Or striving to. So, for example, the church is very clear, if you've ever read the Catechism of the Catholic Church, that we have to be careful not to do things that could cause scandal to others. And that just by causing scandal, even if something we're doing isn't a sin, but it can look scandalous, that is a sin by the scandal it's causing. And so the church actually lays out these parameters, making it clear that if you are wanting to be a godparent, wanting to be baptized, wanting to be a witness at a wedding, that there are three key things that you need to fall in line with. Number one, you have to, if, for example, you've lived a sinful life, or, for example, in this case, you've rejected the biological reality of your body and you mutilated your body, you're taking cross-sex hormones, you're saying that you're not what God created you as, there has to be, in order to receive the sacraments, an acknowledgement of a mistake that's been made. Number one. And number two, that you're starting to realign yourself with your biological sex. And third, that you're taking steps to undo the scandalous damage, for example, in surgeries and the way you're being presented, to not continue to cause scandal. So essentially, what the document from the Vatican had to show was that anyone can be baptized. However, we need to make sure there's no scandal caused by the way things look, but also because we want to set straight a good example of what it looks like to live a Catholic lifestyle, but also for the sake of that individual, they're called to conversion. The grace of the sacrament should be and is available to all, but that doesn't mean you can abuse the sacrament. Sacraments are gifts to be received. That means there are parameters to be candidates for baptism. And this is where we turn this to the work that priests are doing in their local parishes, where they have to navigate sometimes these difficult situations with the ideal and goal of the conversion of souls, the salvation of souls. Now, sometimes individuals, myself, yourself, our pride gets in the way. We try to make a point. Well, this person's Catholic, and I think they're a great Catholic, and I'm choosing this person as a godparent for my child. And I get it. Maybe there's someone you really love and you think by them becoming a godparent, it could really set a good example for them or inspire them to live a better life. Maybe you think that by choosing this person, you can show that there are different ways to be Catholic. Again, this is kind of our pride getting in the way that we can lead to the salvation of someone's soul, that we can lead, that we have to do something such as this to prove a point. And I'll just give an example. I have a lot of family members who my whole lifetime have identified as being in same-sex relationships and have brought partners around. And this has just been part of my family, probably is a part of yours too. And just because that's so doesn't mean that I would necessarily choose someone who's living an adverse lifestyle to what the church teaches, even though they call themselves Catholic and even go to church. I have a family member, for example, who for years has always played the piano at Mass. And again, that's another conversation for another day. But what I'm pointing to is that doesn't mean that just because someone's trying to live their Catholic faith means that they're necessarily a good person to choose as a pillar for a model as a godparent. And so I think there are a lot of intricate elements here to this whole conversation. But at the end of the day, in the conversation of godparents in particular, a godparent should be someone who will be, one, a good religious example for your child, two, give sound Catholic guidance to assist you as parents in the upbringing of your children in the faith, and three, who will fervently pray for your child. I think there's a lot of pressure sometimes, especially in big Catholic families maybe, to pick particular people. Maybe you really want your siblings to be a godparent, or this person really desires to be a godparent. I remember when I was a kid, I really wanted to be a godparent. Like, as soon as I became a teenager, I felt like this is just a trophy. It would be amazing to be a godparent. And I remember one of my aunts said that she was going to make me the godparent of her kid, and she didn't end up doing it after all. I think she left the church for the while and came back. But it was interesting because I remember, like, thinking back on that now, we sometimes wear different things as trophies rather than seeing the perspective of the sacrament. The sacrament is God's grace, the mystery of the God's grace working in our lives. And that doesn't mean that we should receive that no matter what. It's an absolute gift to receive God's grace, but that doesn't mean that there aren't parameters. That's why I think this whole conversation, the whole title of some of these articles and mainstream and even some of the Catholic media that, quote, transgender people can be godparents and be baptized. Of course you could be baptized, but that doesn't mean that you're not called to conversion. If you want to be baptized, you are called to subscribe to what the church teaches. This is why an infant can be baptized, and the parent's faith is that voice. That parent's consent is that voice in helping to raise a child in their faith. And so that's why you're a candidate for confirmation. You're a candidate for baptism when you go through the sacraments as an adult, because you now are of an age of reason where you're consenting to these things. You're saying, yes, I'm going to live my life in accordance with this. I believe in good and evil. I believe in the one true God. I believe in the power of baptism, the necessity of baptism. I believe in God, the Trinitarian God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. There are a lot of things that we have to subscribe to, and that means we have to fall in line with the blueprint God has for our lives. And so just to give some clarification, there's a difference between saying anyone can be a godparent, anyone can be baptized, and saying, yes, anyone can be baptized or anyone can be a godparent. However, they're called to set a good example that doesn't lead to scandal and confusion with what the church teaches. And there are tons of people who are on their own journey, whose details of their life we may not fully understand. And a priest may be working side by side with a person as they go through their baptism. And we might not know all the details of the great steps in conversion this person's going through. Maybe they're still presenting in a way that looks like they're living and pushing this transgender identity. We have to be careful not to be too judgmental in those situations, but to allow God's mercy to work alongside with our priests who are being faithful to the teaching of the church and working for the conversion and salvation of souls. And so I think these are some key insights to help us in seeing that we need to not get uptight when it comes to this topic, but also merciful, and also see the caution in not causing scandal and setting the example of what it is to fall in line with subscribing to what the Catholic Church teaches. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio. Let's not overcomplicate or confuse headlines that don't explain the beauty of the great calling and expectation and invitation of life that's meant to be lived in Jesus Christ. And I think this is an opportunity to ponder the deeper grace available in the sacrament of baptism. Because I just keep thinking of signs and symbols of baptism in the Old Testament. And just starting with the New Testament, John the Baptist prepared the way for Jesus Christ. And before we had the instituted sacrament of baptism in the church with Christ, we had John the Baptist, who was the last prophet of the Old Testament, technically, who was preaching a baptism of what? A baptism of repentance. Go and read the New Testament. Go and read the Gospels. John the Baptist was calling people to conversion, not to just continue your life the way it is, but that by the grace of God, your life is being radically transformed. And so that's a great image for us to see and understand the role of baptism in our life. Through John the Baptist, prior to the sacrament of baptism, he was preaching a baptism of repentance. Step into the sacraments of the church and Jesus Christ instituting the church. Yes, if you're an adult, you should come here renouncing all sin and planning to step forward in the way of Jesus Christ. Now, God knows we're not perfect. He knows we will fall. He knows that we have a fallen human nature, which is why we need confession so that we can worthily receive our Lord Jesus Christ, body, blood, soul, and divinity in the Eucharist, but also so that we can receive the grace necessary to continue to battle sin by the mercy of God. Now, let's look to the Old Testament and just some signs of baptism that you and I are all familiar with. The most common symbol of baptism from the Old Testament, you're probably thinking about it too, is with Moses and the parting of the Red Sea, the deliverance of the Hebrew people from Egypt as they start their 40-year journey into the desert to find the Promised Land. All of this is significant because the people were spending years upon years upon years, hundreds of years in Egypt as slaves. So long that they start to forget their God. They began to fail in worshiping God. And so here they are, they're being liberated from captivity in Egypt. And the separating of the Red Sea, as literally this massive miracle occurs where the Red Sea is parted and the people of the Hebrew people travel through the Red Sea out across to their journey of worshiping God, coming into alignment with God, and ultimately after years wandering the desert to the Promised Land. That parting the Red Sea and the people passing through the Red Sea is a symbolism, a prefigurement of baptism. The new way of life in God. God as our Redeemer. There are types of Redeemers in the Old Testament. They're types of Jesus Christ in the Old Testament. And Moses is a type of Christ prefiguring him, bringing them through baptism in this priestly role to God, bringing them through the Red Sea, out of the Red Sea, to this journey of worshiping God. Even if you take your eyes back to the dawn of creation in Genesis chapters 1 and 2, we read about the creation of the world. We hear about the water and the separation of the water. We read about the Spirit hovering over the water in Genesis chapters 1 and 2. Again, these are all symbols of creation in God. And creation in God is a symbol of baptism. Water, you know, our Protestant brothers and sisters talk a lot about being born again. But when we look at baptism, we look at it as being born from above, born of Christ into a new way of life. And so when you hear headlines and stories about who can and can't do things, the sacrament of baptism is available to everyone. But we are called to walk in a new way of life and renounce sin from our lives, to eradicate it from our lives by the grace of Jesus Christ. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio. Okay, so another interesting topic while we're on the issue of gender and marriage, and before we get there, I do want to mention that joining me in just a few moments, it's Marriage Hour today on Trending. We will be with Doug Hinder. Now, Doug Hinder is a licensed marriage and family therapist, and he has excellent advice to help you navigating the challenges of your marriage, of parenting. So if you have a question, the number is 888-914-9149. Happy to take that question as well online. Just follow me at Tim Marie, T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. We put a question box up on Instagram and Facebook. So here's some interesting news. Gen Z They've changed their support. They're changing their support for so-called, quote, gay marriage. Headline is showing that a new study came out of the American Enterprise Institute Survey Center on American Life. And there's been an 11% drop among Gen Z Americans in their support for marriage between two people of the same sex. In other words, their increase for heterosexual marriage between one man and one woman is increasing, and their support for gay marriage, if that's what you want to call it, again, quotation marks, that's dropped. Now, if you're wondering who Gen Z is, they're at their oldest, at their peak age right now, 26 years old. They consist of those born after 1996. Now, these people who are just new, last 4 or 5 years to the workforce, you're starting to work with them. You're starting to see them as your peers and colleagues in the workforce. You're seeing them. They're part of the great group of people. And that's not just Gen Z who doesn't really want to work. This whole great resignation or not wanting to work to begin with. It's interesting. There's much that could be said of Gen Z, but here's my take on this. So apparently, in the last 2 years, Gen Z Americans have dropped their support for so-called same-sex marriage by 11%. In just 2 years. That's down from 80%. So before, it was basically 4 out of 5 Gen Zers supported same-sex marriage. Now we're approaching our way toward just half. It's interesting. So basically 7 out of 10. Again, it's more than half, but still to see an 11% drop in just 2 years, that's huge. What do you think is influencing this? If you have a key take on this, I'd love to hear from you. Why do you think Gen Z has less support for gay marriage than ever before? They're at their oldest, 26 years old this year. Why is that? The number is 888-914-9149. Here's my take, and I think this is really good news. Number one, I think there's been a pendulum swing. Sometimes when you see something so extreme in society that is so contrary to human nature, so contrary to God and our natural ingrained desire for God, desire for the infinite, desire for transcendence and beauty, at a certain point, you go running in the opposite direction. And so I have hope that among young people age 26 and down, they are the beginning of a pendulum swing of saying, no, what's happening in the world today is chaotic. And so-called gay marriage is chaotic. It's not procreative. It's not permanent. It's temporary. It's fleeting. That's why I reported earlier this week on the story of another Hollywood couple, a Hollywood hairstylist and a big movie star, I can't remember their names, who entered into a, quote, same-sex marriage and just 6 months later had already separated. It's interesting because the headlines were so shocked it only lasted 6 months. Well, I'm not surprised. Tyler joined us here on Monday sharing his story of having lived, partied, and promoted the same-sex ideology. He was at the pride parades, and he left that for his Catholic faith, to live a chaste Catholic life, even though he still experiences same-sex attraction. It's because that life promises nothing. That imitation of marriage that we've seen for, what, approaching 10 years and a couple years here in 2015, after the Supreme Court decision of Obergefell versus Hodges making so-called same-sex marriage the way of the land for people who want it, it's not what they thought it would be because it's an attempt at imitation. So the pendulum is swinging because young people who are coming into those marriageable years, that is Gen Z being at its oldest, 26 years old today, they want what marriage actually is. And why would that be? So number one, I think the good news is the pendulum swing. But number two, the other piece of good news is that I think about half of young people are growing up outside of marriage without parents who live together, especially as they enter into their teen years. About half of kids now don't have intact parents, intact homes. And I think these kids are saying, I want a mom and a dad. I want a mom and a dad in a loving relationship. And I want to have that loving relationship. And I see that my desire for my mom and my dad shouldn't be taken from other kids, and that marriage really is within the context of a man and a woman. And that's where you see greater fidelity between men and women, where you see a greater sense of complementarity between men and women, where you see the only ability to be procreative and actually have children between men and women. And also, by the way, where you're seeing greater success in raising children. A lot of people, for example, NSYNC singer from my childhood, the boy band singer Lance Bass, he went through surrogacy along with a lot of other people who are in same-sex relationships who can't have children because they're in same-sex relationships. And he himself shared, and I'm going to post a link to that episode in the show notes because it's an interesting story where I covered that Lance Bass has had a hard time bonding with his child born via surrogacy and IVF, and how the kid, any time that Lance takes the kid around his mom, the grandma of the child, the kid's cuddling up and desperately looking for female attention. Why? Because kids need marriages. In other words, a mom and a dad to give them the love and tenderness and strength and complementarity that is so desired. And that's, I truly believe, why we see the good news of this pendulum swing in opposition to, quote, gay marriage, and why kids want more. That is, they want real, true marriage between one man and one woman that brings new life into the world. You're listening to Trending with Tim Murray. If you have a question, the number is 888-914-9149. It's question time with licensed marriage and family therapist here on Trending in just a moment. And also, if you would like to learn about how to grow in a relationship with your spouse, have a deeper friendship, we'll cover it with Doug Hinder in just a moment.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back to Trending. If you have a question for licensed marriage and family therapist, Doug Hinder is here with us today on Trending. The number is 888-914-9149. What's going on in your marriage? What's happening with parenting your kids? This is your opportunity to ask your question. You can also ask it on social media. Just follow me at Timmerie. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. We put that question box up on my story on Instagram and Facebook. Make it easy, or send a direct message. We're happy to take it that way as well. We're going to dive into growing your friendship with your spouse, whether you're engaged, been married for years. There's some help for tips for how to spice that relationship up a bit. But before we go there, I want to start, Doug, with taking a couple questions if you're ready for them.
Timmerie, love to do it.
Okay, so Veronica on Instagram said, my husband yells, makes fun of kids and myself, and name calls when he's angry. How do I handle this? She said, I've tried talking to him many times about how this makes me feel. What guidance do you have?
Well, yeah, so that's tough, right? We call that contempt, right? And it's one of the four horsemen. It's one of the things that are that is the most destructive in a marriage. And I think here's the deal. Men are very sensitive to criticism. So depending on how you talk to him, he may or may not be open to that. And Veronica, when you talk to him in a way that perhaps makes it look like he's doing something wrong and he's failing, he's going to get defensive and tune that out. So I recommend you start off using I words and how you feel, right? And I feel sad for our children. I feel insulted or put down when you call me names or when you put our children down. And I really want our children to grow up with great self-confidence. And I would like to ask you if you could please, you know, find at least one thing you could compliment each day about our children. So start with your feelings. So I feel frustrated. I feel frightened. I feel sad when you talk to our children like this. And then I'd like to ask you to let's find something positive to say about them. That would be my suggestion.
This is great. Clearly communicating how it makes you feel without the criticism, because as you said, men are very sensitive to criticism. And even when you might seem to think it's a just criticism, reshaping that conversation can help to bring forward a positive outcome so people aren't backed up against a wall. Thank you, yeah. Doug. Tons more questions are coming in. Again, the number is 888-914-9149. Bets on Instagram said, how do you deal with husband being a narcissist? How do you keep accepting or stopping his narcissistic behavior? Now, Doug, before we dive into the question, I feel like narcissism is a big buzzword in mainstream psychology today. Could you start maybe with a definition of narcissism before taking the question? And I can repeat it if you want.
Sure. Well, narcissists have a grandiose idea of their own importance. They lack empathy. They're very manipulative. And it's all about them and their happiness and their satisfaction. They don't take criticism well at all. They devalue the people they're with. And the gaslighting is a big part of what they do. And that you always, if you hear words like, well, you misunderstood, that's not what I said, you're overly sensitive. These are some of the catchphrases of narcissists.
So what do you do? In this case, she says her husband's a narcissist. How do you keep accepting or stopping the behavior?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And if I had the answer to that, I'd be a very wealthy man. of all of the personality disorders, narcissists have the lowest cure rate. So something like single digits of narcissists actually ever get better because they literally believe that everyone else is wrong and they're right. And I'm not motivated to change if I'm right. And so no matter what you tell the narcissist, they discount you, not themselves. And so it's really very hard to change a narcissist. And there, you know, there's some great YouTube videos out there about how to live with a narcissist, because pretty much you're going to have to live in their world and learn how to play by their rules. Very difficult to be married to a narcissist, very difficult to live with a narcissist.
Let's talk about prayer for a moment, if we can. Just looking within marriage, Doug, sometimes when we find ourselves maybe in what might seem like hopeless circumstances, praying for God to soften the heart of our spouse and really saying, okay, God, I can't fix this person. I can't change this person. And I am abandoning this to you, and I am asking you for you to work on this person, and asking other people who in confidence can pray. You know, even I love the tradition that used to be more common in the church of going to the convents and going to the monasteries, asking the religious sisters and the monks to pray for your marriage and for your spouse. Do that, and maybe even writing to them. We had a Carmelite convent by our house that we lived next to for a couple years, and it was such a joy to be able to go there and sometimes just handwrite a letter asking the sisters to pray. And it was one way street, right? I didn't hear back from them, but you can. Sometimes they do write back. And I think it gives you a sense of hope and writing things out and an opportunity for other people to pray as well. Any guidance on the prayer side when maybe you're losing hope?
I'm a big, big believer of the power of the Carmelites' prayers. And I've seen it firsthand. There's a Carmelite convent close to me too. And the sisters there are very powerful in their prayers, number one. Number two, I think there's something to be said for sanctifying our suffering. And all marriages contain suffering, every single one of them, some more than others, for sure. But we, you know, our faith teaches us that suffering can be sanctified, and we can unite our cross with Christ's cross and bring back healing, you know. And think of, Saint Monica, who prayed and suffered a lot for her husband, and he converted at, towards the end of his life. So I think, yes, don't give up prayer, and then sanctify your suffering, turn it into good, offer it to our Lord, unite it to his suffering, and do it for the salvation of your husband, and do it for the salvation of your children as well.
Love this guidance from a Catholic perspective, having hope even in the midst of very challenging circumstances. That's Doug Hinder here on Trending with Tim Ray. We'll speak in just a moment about growing your friendship with your spouse, and we're taking your questions. The number is 888-914-9149. Miss Liz has asked, at what point is it okay to walk away from an uncooperative spouse, a child parent, without having guilt?
Well, that's a tough question. I mean, to walk away from a parent or a child is one thing. To walk away from a spouse to whom you're married and you till death do us part, that's a different deal. And I think different rules apply. And so, I'm in the business of saving marriages, not helping them dissolve. And, if the marriage is so bad that you need to walk away from it, I think that's a spiritual question, and you need guidance from a priest on that. And I think there's always hope. Marriages can always be saved. I think every single marriage on the planet can be saved if both husband and wife want to work on it and want to save it. Now, I think, the exception, of course, is physical abuse. You can't stay in a physically abusive relationship. The decision is much harder when it's emotionally abusive. And because, you know, and we all hurt our spouses from time to time. Most of us don't do it intentionally, but we still do it because we're flawed. We have defects and shortcomings. And so to make that decision, I think it's a prayerful decision that you've got to make. And it, you know, I work with a lot of couples who really wrestle with it where, you know, if they have children, man, is it, it would be better for me to be out of this bad marriage, but then, you know, my spouse will have half custody and then my children will be with that person without me there to run interference. And that might be worse for our children. And I think generally better if you can find ways to stay together and find a way to sanctify your marriage, because marriage is here, right, to get us into heaven, for us to become holy, for us to become saints in our marriage. And that's going to entail some suffering. There's no saint I'm aware of that whose life didn't contain suffering, and ours will as well. And where that line is between I can't suffer in this marriage anymore and I need to leave, everybody's got to make that decision on their own. That's a really, really tough question.
Doug, this has seemed to be a theme of some of the people I've been around recently, where they've had estranged family members or strained relationships and maybe a season of discernment of cutting people off or what that relationship looks like. And I just keep meditating upon our Lord and how faithful he is to us, the sacrifice he made on the cross, and how we see the perfection of charity, that is of love there, and his fidelity, in even in the midst of all of our infidelities. And we spit on the cross and we sin. We put those nails into his hands, into his feet. We puncture his side. And I'm not saying to and to stay in a relationship that is dangerous, but for us to have the humility and the prayer life to discern better these relationships with mercy and Christ, and accepting people where they're at and having the boundaries that there are times where you can't be around them. Maybe it's frequency in your week, frequency in your day, that for your sake of being healthy and whole, but that you can still love the person where they are out of love for Christ.
Well, see, exactly right. Exactly right. So I can still love you even if I'm not going to be around you. I can still love you even if I'm going to set a boundary that says you can't be around me if you're going to treat me poorly. And I think those conversations go like that and say, listen, you know what? I'm a son of God. I'm a daughter of God. I'm created in God's image and likeness. And I cannot allow myself to be verbally abused, to be mistreated. And so if you're going to treat me poorly, I'm not going to allow myself to be around you. And I love you and I'd like you to be an important part of my life, but only if you're going to treat me well. And if you've chosen not to treat me well, then what you've said is you really don't want me in your life. And so I'm going to set a boundary around that until you're ready to treat me well. And then I'll let you back in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Excellent guidance and tips from Doug Hinder, a licensed marriage and family therapist. We'll be right back with him and we will discuss how to grow your friendship with your spouse, whether you're dating, soon to be married, or have been in it for years. Some great tips from licensed marriage and family therapist Doug Hinder. Don't go away.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Join Relevant Radio at the National Eucharistic Congress next July in Indianapolis and prepare for the historic gathering with Eucharistic Encounters. It's a collection of short videos about the power of the real presence told by Father Rocky. So check out the videos this week on Eucharistic Encounters. Father Rocky shares the best advice he's ever received. Was it from a priest, a coworker, both? Find out with this week's encounter at relevantradio.com/encounter. That's relevantradio.com/encounter. Our toll-free line, if you have a question for Doug Hinder, licensed marriage and family therapist, what's going on in your marriage? We'd love to discuss it. The number is 888-914-9149. You can find Doug at happymarriageforlife.com. That's happymarriageforlife.com. Doug, you said there's some great tips for how you can grow in your friendship with your spouse. A lot of people struggle with this, whether whether it's the busyness of kids, the resentment that's harbored over time, or just years go by and you get lazy. So what needs to be done to grow your marriage and your relationship specifically?
Good. Thanks, Timmy. Because friendship is it's got to be the foundation that you build your relationship on. And I think there's two parts to it. I mean, the first part is we have some shared interests. We actually enjoy spending time together. We like to bowl, or we like to go to the movies, or like same kind of restaurants. We like to go for walks or bike rides. We actually enjoy spending time together. And then it kind of goes to, you know, Father Rocky's tip in his book on date night, right? And so successful couples find a way to carve out a date night every single week so that we can enjoy each other's company without screens, without phones, without children, just the two of us. That's an important thing. And I think the other thing is, you know, if I asked you who your best friend was, you know, you'd give me somebody's name and I'd say, so why is that person your best friend? And you'd say something like, well, I can tell that person anything. I mean, I can confide in them my deepest secrets, and they're there to pick me up when I'm down low, and they're there to share in my joy when I'm happy. And they're the person I turn to whenever I need someone to pick me up. Well, that's what you need to be to your spouse, and that's what your spouse needs to be to you. You need to be your spouse's safe harbor. When I'm having a bad day, I want you to come home to me because I'm going to be here for you. I'm going to support you. I'm going to tell you you're a great person. I'm going to pick you up. I'm going to affirm you. I'm going to praise you. I'm going to tell you you're terrific. So this idea of being a safe harbor, of being an emotionally safe person is really important. And we grow in safety to the degree that I don't worry that you're going to criticize me. You're not going to put blame on me. If I've had a bad day at work, you're going to comfort me and hold me and tell me it's going to be okay. So let's spend time doing things together that we enjoy, and let's be safe. Your heart is safe with me. I'm going to take good care of your heart. You don't need to worry about that. So that's an important part of friendship.
And isn't that so cute right now? I find the common comment I hear from people is just how there's a struggle of criticism and critique between the spouses. And that's the antithesis of building that friendship and fortifying it. And it's not something you do when you're dating. I mean, you would never marry the person if that's, at least you shouldn't, if that's what you received all during the dating and courting process. But then marriage settles in. Why does that settle in and prevent friendships from developing?
You know what? Life gets in the way, right? I think just about everything in the world works to drive a wedge between a husband and a wife, right? I mean, working, paying the bills, raising babies, doing laundry, doing dishes, mowing the lawn, everything works to kind of pull a couple apart, which is why they've got to be really intentional about spending time together. And 1% investment. Okay,
yep. Sorry, you dropped for a second. You said we need a 1% investment.
Yeah, a daily 1% investment in the marriage. So 1% of 24 hours is about 15 minutes. So I encourage couples to take 10 or 15 minutes every day just to connect. And no kids, no screens. You can put some music on if you'd like. But this is the time to say, hey, tell me about your day. What went well for you today? What didn't go well for you today? Let me tell you, it's going to be okay. And let me share my day with you. And kind of what's going on in your heart that you want me to know about so that I can make sure I'm there for you to support you and encourage you in the ways that you'd need it. So 1% daily investment. And, you know, the divorce rate ticks up when couples get into their 60s because now we're getting ready to retire. The kids are out of the house, but we've not kept the friendship up. And I don't really know who you are anymore. And not sure I like you all that much. And so by making a daily 1% investment, you can ensure that you're not going to, you know, all of a sudden become 65 and be married to a stranger.
Mm-hmm. It's not much when you say 10 or 15 minutes. And I get it. I hear from people, even when you mentioned the success of couples who carve out that weekly date night, I hear from people and I get it as well. You're busy, you have little kids, the cost to go on a weekly date, the cost to get a babysitter. I hear all of those, I don't want to call them excuses, but legitimate roadblocks. Yet when you say, okay, take the date night, do what you have to do, and then take this 10 to 15 minute a day commitment, which is just 1% of your day, Maybe even if you're staying up later. I don't know. Do you advise doing things like cleaning up everything in the house together while the kids are asleep? Or do you need to sit down and have that face-to-face time, which isn't as much of a need for men as it is for women?
Yeah, no, that's very true. But yes, I think sit down, no distractions. You are now going to get my total attention for the next 12 and a half minutes. And I'm not going to look at anything, do anything. I'm not going to straighten up the magazines on the end table. I'm just going to talk to you. We're going to stare each other in the eye. We're going to hold hands if we feel the need to do that. And we're just going to invest this time just in the two of us. And the dishes can wait because nothing is more important to me than you. And this time is sacred in our day, and we're not going to compromise on it. I will say this, of all the things that I ask my couples to work on, this is the toughest. Consistently, they come back week after week and say, man, we just couldn't find the time to do it. Or we did it once, it was great, but we couldn't find any time the rest of the week. Making this commitment is really hard, especially if you have small children. But man, it is so important. It pays such huge dividends. If you can't do 15 minutes, do 10. If you can't do 10, do 5. If you can't do 5, at least do 2 minutes before you go to bed where you say, I want to tell you why I love you. I want to tell you what's so special about you. I just want to share with you that I'm still so happy that God brought you into my life.
And I get this right now because we're in the season. I have two little ones, a two and almost 3 year old and an almost 1 year old. And just bedtime, it takes so much time at night between, you know, I nurse the one, I put her to sleep, that one's done. And then the other one really just wants a mom to put her to bed, but she's like desperate for me to lay with her. And I'm like falling asleep while I'm like waiting to sneak out the room for the night. Yeah. And it's a long time sometimes. And so at the end, I'm like, I just sit here, I just want to talk to my husband for a minute, but maybe he's already gone to bed, or maybe he's scrubbing dishes and I just need a shower. Yeah. It's easy to be two ships passing in the wind. And I'm already foreseeing, Doug, that this is just a trend that could go on for years upon years upon years.
You've got to get really intentional about it and real serious about it because everything gets in the way. You know, you love those children, but those children, they absorb so much time and so much energy that by the time the night's over, you're exhausted. And half the time, you're right. You're falling asleep in bed with the child, and the child's awake, and you're asleep. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah. We had a loud moment last night where I'm waiting. I prayed my rosary. She still wasn't asleep. I'm laying there. I tried to sneak out twice. She still wasn't asleep, and she's clinging on to my neck like a cobra. And she's finally settling down, and my husband's like, where are you? And he comes in, and the dad whisper just isn't a whisper sometimes. He goes, psst, did you fall asleep? And I'm like, no, but she's awake now. It was one of those.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. I love you. However,
your point's a really good one. And it's advisable not to let this 1% investment wait till the end of the night because you're just so exhausted. And so carve out time, you know, when you first get together, you know, before dinner maybe, or right after dinner, just throw the dishes in the sink and carve out some time. But I get it, Timmer. You are right in the heart of the most difficult time for this with these young children who are just so totally dependent on you.
So talk to me about the weekend getaway. I know this is one of your tips that needs to be incorporated into the year that I think a lot of couples just don't get away and take. But I just heard from someone the other day, they went on their first weekend getaway. They have two little kids and they're like, I feel like a teenager again. It was so much fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's huge. It's huge. And you know what? It does not have to be an expensive weekend, you know, at some downtown, you know, spa. Listen, this can be the Holiday Inn one suburb over. You know, if it's got a swimming pool and a hot tub, you got everything you need. And it's just the idea that we're just going to carve out some time just for the two of us where we can stay up late if we want to. We can sleep in late if we want to. We don't have to be answerable to anybody but the two of us. We could order room service and have breakfast in bed. We could do whatever it is we want to do. And I think, and the idea is we're just going to focus on the two of us. And, you know, the date night, a lot of couples do the date night wrong. They use it as a logistics planning session. You know, who's picking up the dry cleaning? Who's taking the kid to soccer? No. This is, we're now going to take 2 hours on Friday night to do what we take 10 minutes every night to do. And now once a year, we're going to take 2 days to do what we take 2 hours a week to do. Just focus on each other, deepen our friendship, have some deep, meaningful conversations, and just enjoy each other's company.
Love this. We have tons more questions coming in. I'd love to run through a couple. And if you're just joining us, that's licensed marriage and family therapist Doug Hinder. You can find his website, happymarriageforlife.com. That's happymarriageforlife.com. Okay, let's see. Valerie on Instagram said, my question for Doug is, I'm studying to become an art therapist. And she said, how can I also be a Christian and or Catholic therapist as well? What are some good resources? By the way, and what is an art therapist?
So, you know, they use art with their clients for the client to express how they're feeling through art, you know, and through, you know, dark paintings versus happy paintings, et cetera. You can read a lot into what people do. I think I would recommend the Catholic Psychotherapist Association, a phenomenal organization of therapists who are Catholic. And I think a great resource there. You know, most of what you're going to learn, unfortunately, in secular schools is going to be contrary to our faith. And so an organization like CPA really helps us Christianize and, you know, the science that we're all about trying to help people. So I would recommend them as a great resource.
We'll grab that link and post on social media. I went to the Catholic Psychotherapist Association conference this year. It was fantastic. And to see all of the sound science behind a Christian-based therapy program is excellent. So thanks for joining us, Doug. He's back on with us again next week. That's Doug Hinder, marriage and family therapist. Find him at marriageforlife.com. That's marriageforlife.com. We'll be right back, should I say, tomorrow on Trending. And coming up is Father Rocky for the Family Rosary Across America. This is Timory from Trending with Timory. Thursday on Trending, we'll dive into infertility treatment, latest diet fads, infertility treatment that isn't kosher with the Catholic Church's teaching, but the hope and mercy that's available there. Also, we'll talk about everything from theology of the body and dive into Barbie. Maybe you're still talking about the trend from the summer of the Barbie movie, but I uncovered some startling and interesting information about Barbie that you might be intrigued, especially since it's on the latest cover of Time. Join me 6 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio.